Mini episode 1811 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1811. Another all-star panel here today on the FDH Lounge. We are recapping Super Bowl 59 with my fellow FDH Lounge dignitaries, Steve Callis and Joe Stazak, the latter of whom was one of the happiest people that I knew personally as the Super Bowl was ensuing here. And my great friends, longtime FDH Lounge dignitaries and co-hosts of the Callis Remarks podcast. You want to check that out. Of course, Joe being the co-host also of Philly Pulse. I've been very privileged to be on the Philly Pulse a couple of times previously talking about all of this. And Joe, I'll start with you. Congratulations. And it had to be one of the best days of your life, of course, alongside the previous Super Bowl that went your way in 2018. And oh, by the way, maybe also the birth of your children, right? Maybe we'll throw that in there.
You squeeze them in there somewhere. They're in there somewhere. I appreciate that, Rick. How you doing, Steve? Great to be here. Yes, very pleased. You know, two years ago today was the other Super Bowl that we don't talk about much anymore.
Yeah.
It's been 2 years. It's been like kind of a big wound, an open wound that you know, you had a chance to, it was kind of a do-over, same team, kind of same, you know, that team's still rolling and the Eagles are still rolling. So it wasn't a different team. It wasn't like they played the Bills. Looking back on it, I'm glad it was the Chiefs because it really kind of closed up that wound from 2 years ago. I remember walking, I was just texting my friend. He's like, yeah, 2 years ago today, we're walking out of the stadium and all the confetti's falling on us. And we were all, it was a rough night after that. But yeah, 2 years later, hey. You know, like Jalen said, it wasn't our time. So, okay, I'll go with
yeah.
that.
It's the kind of closure that you don't often get in sports, but sure, I will say.
Yeah, you don't. You really don't. And I was happy for that.
The 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers did teach me, though, that it does happen in sports.
It does happen. Sometimes. It does
yes,
happen, right?
I'm grateful right. for that. Yes, sure, I'm very grateful that happened.
Huge.
And Counselor Steve Callis, I know that, again, you know, you coming from where you've come from, a fan of the Big Blue and everything, but over the years, you know, you having done so much media with Joe in the Philly area here, I mean, it must have hit you in the feels at least a little bit to see this.
Hey, absolutely. Dominant team. I bow down to you, both of you guys and Johnny Callis, all of whom picked the Eagles. And I have to say, because Johnny made a big pitch about Mahomes' legacy, to me, Mahomes in this game wasn't Mahomes. As I told Joe when we did our show, he, you know, Jalen Hurts out Mahomes, Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Out Mahomes, Mahomes.
Yeah.
Because every time he stepped up and into the pocket, he got sacked. I don't know what. I understand their ends came in from so wide it was hard. But in the past, he's always been able to get out and go around. Also, he doesn't just have to go. In fact, obviously, Hurts was not only the superior rusher, but as I'm sure Joe knows, his 72 yards set the record for a quarterback rushing in the Super Bowl, which broke
his own
Hurts' 70-yard record 2 years ago in the Super Bowl. So you got to give him all the credit in the world. It was not a game. You know, you always think it's Mahomes, it's Mahomes, it's Mahomes. I'll go back to Johnny and I went to the Atlanta Patriots game. It was 21-3, and then Brady throws a pick six in the third quarter, and the Patriots fans never quite gave up. I always thought there was a chance, maybe. But once they were getting slaughtered at the half, and most importantly, when they came out for the third quarter and couldn't move the ball, was like whatever brilliant halftime things they came up with simply didn't work. And, you know, it was a rout. When they say 40-22 doesn't show how close the game was, they're 100% right. And you're talking about a score that ended with the team winning by 18, and it wasn't that close. So all credit to the Eagles. Their defense was incredible. I would have given the MVP to the front four. I don't know how Joe feels about that, but I would have given it to the front four. Hurts was great. He deserves it. He's in Disney World, of course. We've seen the commercial 23 times.
Yeah.
But he deserves it. He, you know, he stood his ground. He didn't listen to the noise. And he played great. He played Mahomes-like. And, you know, between throwing it, deep balls, running, he was tremendous. And Spags didn't have any answers. They stopped Barkley for, you know, if you heard before the game, Barkley was going to rush for 57 yards or whatever he ran for. You'd be like, game over. The Chiefs are big winners. But didn't turn out to be like that. And once you saw the first half, realistically, five punts, two interceptions, both bad interceptions, I thought, for Mahomes. No tips or anything. I thought the game was over at halftime. Not that you had to be a genius to think that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we all kind of did at that point. There was a big exhale at my Super Bowl party. Everybody was rooting for Philadelphia there. And I will say, prior to the Super Bowl coming on here, when my commissioner was grilling steaks for us in his garage, Joe, I did take my iPad out in the garage and show him from the recent Philly Pulse when we were talking about him 2 years ago at the Super Bowl, pointing at the Kelce brothers on the screen and saying they are so Cleveland Heights. So he was delighted to see himself referenced. But I bring this up also because he and I said something out there that turned out to be the case. And I referenced what I had said to him. I think it was on your show. Maybe it was also on my show. I don't remember. They're all blurring together right now, right? What we said where. But the whole thing about that, it sounds weird to call the quarterback of one of the teams in the Super Bowl an X factor, particularly, again, a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. I mean, this isn't somebody who – this isn't like Brad Johnson in a career year or Trent Dilfer or anything like that. We're talking about a legitimate star quarterback. I think we can now definitively say superstar in Jalen Hurts, but he was an X factor. And it seems like Spagnuolo treated him that way, like we're going to make him beat us, whereupon he was like, okay, sure, if that's what it takes – went out, beat them. They bottled it up with Barkley. I don't think we would have seen it coming that Barkley would have had such modest run stats on the day, such that I was kind of yelling at the TV in the first half, like, why are you still doing this? Like, but again, they knew what they were doing. They were wearing down the defense, and that was part of it as well. But I think I also said, too, because I only went 4-6 on the Super Bowl with the prop bets and everything like that. The fact that the Eagles won without A.J. Brown hitting the over of like 69.5 yards, very weird Super Bowl in that sense. Although, again, that first one, come on, let them play rough. That was we were all screaming at the TV. That so it should have been over on that one. That's got an asterisk on it. But basically, again, Jalen Hurts went out there, got it done. And for all of the whole thing here, too, I think it even puts it now a little bit more on Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, all the enablers out there. They're like, what do you want? They got to go through Patrick Mahomes every year. Jalen Hurts did it. I'm putting Jalen Hurts over both of those guys because he did it when it counted the most.
Rick, it's funny. I wrote it. It sounds like you read my article because I'm saying
I'm ripping you off.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, because I'm like, Rick, this is all brilliant stuff. Or, you know, I've heard this before. No. Because, he all he does is win, really. I mean, you know that song, all he does is win. And when he does have some of those, listen, it can be frustrating holding the ball against the Rams, getting sacked 7 times. Rams didn't blitz once either that game, or at least on those. Actually, no, they didn't blitz once. It was kind of like the Chiefs, what happened to the Chiefs. He was holding the ball too long, you know. And then when he kind of hears a lot of the noise and then things come to a head, and then he goes out and does what he did against Pittsburgh. Comes to the podium. Guys, is that all you wanted? Was that what you wanted to see? It's kind of like he knows he can do it. Some of the things that they scheme maybe are against throwing it a lot or whatever, but – I've seen him do it when he needs to do it, and I've seen him play in the Super Bowl before. He's 2-2 against Patrick Mahomes in his career, and the first loss he had was a regular season loss in 2021, so he was only his first year starting. But he beat him last year in Kansas City. One fumble away would probably be 3-1 against Patrick Mahomes. So that's what I mean, like, those guys can't get past him, but Jalen doesn't have a problem playing in big games against Patrick Mahomes. I mean, no, he's playing against the defense, but when he goes up against, you know, the Giant and you know, I almost felt bad for Mahomes. He unraveled. And even when he wasn't actually hit. I mean, it's almost like pressure perceived is pressure achieved. And he was throwing balls at guys' legs. And I heard, you know, Kelsey talked about Kelsey quit on a couple plays. Like there was a flag down and he knew the play was coming back and he just stopped. And Patrick's running around still. I don't think he saw the flag. Like, I mean, it was just they kind of like you could see the whole energy kind of drain from Kansas City when they break the huddle and go, they couldn't do anything. You know, and Patrick was, and I've seen that happen to Brady before. Listen, you put pressure on anybody and make them feel uncomfortable, no matter how good you are. Brady couldn't step up into his throws against those the Giants in those two losses, in the Ravens in a couple of AFC title games. But Vangio talked about, I heard an interview with him. He doesn't like to pressure a lot. Doesn't like to blitz.
Sure.
And he was concerned going into the game because he's like, if we do put pressure on him, from a blitzing perspective, he performs very well against the blitz. He didn't have to. I've never seen anything like that. They didn't play like that all year. That front four, you know, it wasn't like the 85 Bears all year. I don't know where that came from, but, man, they maybe it had something to do with Joe Tooney, you know, playing – what did he play, tackle instead of guard, and he's usually a guard. I don't know, but they just were programmed. And, I know there was a technique – bull rush the outside shoulder. It was almost like a not a wide nine, but a wide 11. How they set that up, but you're not alone. By the way, or was Steve saying that beforehand? The front four. Josh Sweat actually said today in the Inquirer he thought he should have been MVP. He goes, I thought I should have had it. So, he's honest at least. But someone then compared. I saw some knuckleheads who were like, "Well, yeah, Von Miller had the same numbers in 2016, and you know against." The Panthers, he had 2.5 sacks, he had 6 tackles, 2 for loss, blah, blah. He wasn't going to, but Peyton Manning had a 56 rating that day through one interception. He couldn't throw the ball between the goalposts by that time in his career.
That's why he got it.
It wasn't like he had to go up against a quarterback who kind of just really, you know, laid into the Panthers. But anyway, they were awesome. The defensive line was awesome. But you're right, Steve. You could have given it to the whole defensive line.
Yeah, and that's how Hurts ended up getting it because it was, you know, if you have to go with one guy, because not only that, you know, what about good old white boy Coop out there too? I mean, there's a lot of people that thought that he was somebody that could have laid claim to it. It was probably the most important play of the game, so if you're going to go off of that, but I thought they did the right thing with Hurts because how do you break it down?
Right.
So many of the other defensive stars, they all kind of cut into each other, and by the way, it's all symbiotic too. I mean, Sweat was able to do what he was doing because the other three guys were doing what they were doing. And by the way, as I pointed out when I was texting with my BFF on Monday, we were looking back on the game, no N'Kobe Dean. I mean, this is incredible. I mean, when you talk about, you know, what's Philly going to be like next year coming in there to do it? Well, look at what they did the last two games of the season when they didn't have him at all. So this is a thing where, again, you know, looking at it, Steve, again, to your point, I agree with your point here as far as that there are a couple of the defensive players there that were certainly worthy of being MVP in the game. I mean, one of the signs of a true dominant performance is the plethora of MVP candidates from the winner, and they certainly showed that. But, I mean, you look at, again, you take the middle linebacker out of there who was such a big piece of them during the regular season, and that's a very good case for optimism for them possibly going for the repeat next year, I would think.
Oh, they got to be the favorites. I know Joe told me the other day they were third or something, but that'll iron out quickly. But the Eagles – were head and shoulders over the Chiefs. Was that a one-off? Not from what I saw, because the Chiefs have so many problems. The Eagles were losing guys, but the Chiefs now, what are they going to do with their offensive line? It's almost you're talking about like the Giants or the Jets offensive line. That's now, Tooney's a Hall of Fame guard. There's no doubt about that. He's a Hall of Fame guard. But you saw the difference. It's interesting. You saw the difference between playing guard where everyone's kind of inside. And when you're playing outside with these guys, bull rushed, they were very athletic. I mean, they put up, I'm sure you saw it, Rick, but they put up the average, it was like 6'6", 315 or 20 pounds for the Eagles offensive line. And in the first Super Bowl, I think the Packers were 6'3 and 245 pounds, which is why I think you can't compare teams then and now. You know, Nick Bonaconte, when the Dolphins were perfect, played middle linebacker, who was 210 pounds, maybe 215. And not to make fun of them, they did what they did when they did it. You know,
right.
Perfect team. But the Eagles looked unbeatable. And you don't see any holes. I mean, Joe talked about this before the game. Their O-line is really, really good. Their D-line is really, really good. Combined, they're far and away the best lineman combinations in the NFL by far. Yeah. The Lions are, you know, now there are plenty of injuries, but they're gone. The Chiefs, you know, they did it pretty well. The numbers with Tooney were actually better, but Tooney, I don't know, was always playing against elite guys. But you give him credit. He took one for the team. He went to left tackle. He's a Hall of Fame guard. He's all pro like 6-7 times. He's got 4 Super Bowls, 2 with the Patriots.
Right.
So I feel bad for him, but I don't feel that bad for him. I mean, Joe said not the 85 Bears, but the Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs, got 1 first down in the first half. That's 85 Bear stuff to me.
They look like the 85 Bears. They totally look like it.
Okay, right? Perfect.
Oh, yeah, they totally played like the 85 Bears. But
they had a plan. They had a plan, and they were able, unlike any other team. I mean, Mahomes had an 11.4 quarterback rating. And we know we talked about the different ones where you can go 158.3 and be perfect. Right. That's not this one. This one was based to 100. And he went 11.4, the lowest of his career. And you just got to wonder what happened. I'm not saying he gave up, but he looked shell-shocked, I'll say. Again, not unlike, as Joe was saying, the two Giants games, because the two Giants games were one. They give Eli Manning MVPs both times. He'll be in the Hall of Fame. He made the helmet throw. And, you know, he made some incredible throws, but they should have given the MVP to that front line.
Yeah.
The Giants in both of them. So, very impressed with the Eagles. I think the Chiefs are in trouble now. Do I think the Bills will beat them? I don't. I mean, if the Bills didn't beat them this year, I don't think they'll beat them. At some point, you go, this guy beat me 4 times in the playoffs now. I'm 4-1 against them in the regular season. The Ravens, who knows what the Ravens are? I think Joe's right. It kind of gets to Lamar in the playoffs. He's got Derrick Henry. I thought and still think they're the best 1-2 running backs. This isn't, you know, Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor from the early Packers. But I think that's the best running combination in the history of the NFL. Didn't really matter. So I think the Eagles have a better open shot now because the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Bengals and the Bills, I mean, they got a bunch of teams now that are really, really good. So I don't know that the Chiefs stand out like they did the last 2 years. And I always just believed, you know, Mahomes magic, but there was no Mahomes magic. The Eagles, though, when you look in the NFC, maybe if the 49ers get healthy, I think they have to pay, not this year. I think they can negotiate with Purdy, but are they going to lose all those guys? Debo Samuel asked for a trade, and they said, go ahead, Debo. Debo was hurt a lot. You know, McCaffrey was hurt a lot. They got to be healthy, and they got to get a little better on defense as well. So right now, when you're looking at it, I know it's easy after the Super Bowl. Oh, I love the Eagles next year. Right. But right now, because in my view, the AFC has a lot of really, really good teams, I think the Eagles will have an easier run because it's not the Packers. Maybe you tell me the Commanders will get better. I just think the Eagles just showed so much in one game. And this is without Barkley. I understand Barkley's rushing did open things up, and that's probably why they stay true to it. 67 yards, not I said 57 before.
Oh, he had 57, yeah. You're right.
And he also had 6 catches for 40 yards.
He almost had 100 yards from scrimmage, which
– right.
So, he looked like a non-factor, but any non-factor, he had 100 yards. Is still pretty good.
Yeah. So, there's such high expectations for him, right. I don't know how these teams are going to stop him next year. They're not going to put this tape in.
Yeah.
Because they got 40. I understand two defensive TDs. But they're not going to put this tape in, and he's going to get his next year, too. 2,000, I don't know. That's a tough one. But I think the Eagles are way up. And, frankly, the Chiefs, I won't say way down. Are they the best team in the AFC right now? Well, based on play until the Super Bowl, yes. Based on this game, I would say no, because they've got holes to fill. And if you didn't know what they were, you know what they are now. Even their running game. Pacheco, I don't know if he ever got healthy. They said he was. But Pacheco's the guy. He hits the guy, and he goes 2 yards forward 9 out of 10 times. Not in this game. So maybe he's still hurt. But, I think the Chiefs are in a little trouble now. Maybe they can do something with the offensive line. They got to go out and spend some money. And much as I love Andy Reid, he's now 3-3 in the Super Bowl. He had his 2 weeks. You know, his bye numbers are unbelievable. His halftime adjustments are good. None of that worked in this game. Nothing happened. It just got from bad to worse to horrific to can you watch it on TV kind of thing. And, Kelce, who said a week before the game he was coming back, Now, yesterday with his brother on the podcast they do, he said, well, I don't know. I need some time to think about it. Clearly, he's not Kelce. And I think clearly he knows it. You know, four catches for 39 yards. I don't know if he dropped one or two, but there were one or two in the range. Mahomes wasn't super accurate, but there were a couple maybe he could have got. And I think that's what he's thinking now. And maybe he's looking at what his brother's doing because his brother's making a gazillion dollars. He's everywhere doing soup commercials and ESPN. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Kelce has that future. The question is, does he want to take a run at one more? Because now the dynasty is probably over.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the whole thing. And when I was on a podcast with my friend, Tony Mazur last night, his great podcast. One of the things that I brought up, because I know Tony's always interested in sort of the cultural angle to things here, is that like the way that like everybody in America that wasn't already a Chiefs fan, we were all rooting for Philadelphia. And I had my own reasons too with Joe. And I have another good friend, one of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ron Glasnap, who's an Eagle fan. But like the whole sort of cultural oppression of the Chiefs and Taylor Swift and all of that, that's broomed away, baby. We're never going back to that. We're never going back to an America where they were the dominant cultural force choking the life out of us. That's not coming back. By the way, as far as it goes with Patrick Mahomes, I teased this to you off air, Steve, that somebody, some mischievous soul on Twitter noted that Patrick Mahomes, 0-1 against Tom Brady, 0-1 in Super Bowls called by Tom Brady, 3-0 in Super Bowls where Tom Brady had nothing to do with it. So take that for what you will. But this is a thing where, yeah, I mean, this Super Bowl, it really was something where, you know, I think we all kind of forecast a close game coming in. And Joe, this is one of these things where I don't know that we necessarily expected this to be the launch to something potentially bigger for Philadelphia. I think you guys probably would have felt that would have been a little bit greedy coming into the game, looking at it that way. But I mean, as far as an outcome that not only gives you this year's championship, but seems to set you up, I think, definitively as next year's champion. I'm so befuddled about why are people betting Baltimore over them and some of these, like, have you watched them in the playoffs the last couple of years? So, I mean, this seems to have positioned you better, I think, going into next year than we would have even really thought coming into the game when you guys were probably just looking for a win to give you this year's Super Bowl and we'll take next year as it comes. But like it or not, you guys are in the catbird seat, I think, for next year.
Yeah, they're in good shape. They're young, too. They're defensively, I think they had 8 new starters on defense. They have the 2 rookie corners that played most of the year. I mean, that doesn't usually happen. They had Lito Shepard, Sheldon Brown, and the Andy Reid, the good teams that went to the Super Bowl in 5 NFC title games. Those guys didn't even play when they were rookies. It was Bobby Taylor and Troy Vincent. There was a transition period. These guys stepped in like week 3. And not only that, they were good, like really good. And Cooper DeJean, God bless him, gets a first interception of the year, pick 6 against Mahomes on his birthday. Are you kidding me? The day before the Super Bowl, he was 21 years old. I wasn't doing that when I was 21, trust me. So, I mean, God bless him. He's incredibly athletic. He looks like if you saw him on the street, you'd be like, oh, some dude. He can jump through the roof. He's like 6'3". I don't know if you – did I send that around? Someone sent me a compilation of his highlights from high school basketball, and he's like a pogo stick. Wow. Just, oh, my God, dunking everything. Going out on a break, a bounce pass to him, dunk, 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 like windmills. Like, I'm like, I would think he'd be like a shooter or something, like, you know, a shooting guard. Man, that's why, obviously, he went in the second round, and he traded up to get him. They traded with Washington, and Washington actually got a good cornerback too, so that worked out. But the rebuild came from the Carson Wentz getting rid of him, Howie getting off of it quickly, not trying to make a big mistake worse. Not, you know, maybe he was embarrassed, obviously, because the whole thing blew up with Wentz, but took a $33 million dead cap money hit, which was the largest in the NFL at the time, and got a little bit of a cap draft capital in return, and ended up trading up to get Devontae Smith after they missed on Jalen Reagor. Well, Steve, we talk about that all the time when Justin Jefferson goes to the Vikings, and then draft day trade for A.J. Brown. They moved up with the Bears to get Jalen Carter off of that. And then he goes out. Howie kind of zagged. I mean, ever, the thought process was you don't pay a lot of money for running backs. And he's like, well, guess what? I'm going to. And, you know, went out and got Saquon Barkley. I don't even think he knew he was going to be that good this year. You know, it's been like, it's like, okay, he's been bottled up with the Giants team. He didn't have a real good offensive line or quarterback. And look what he can do when he has some holes and he's got a quarterback who can take pressure off him. The thing about Barkley, though, and a lot of folks are projecting or just kind of throwing it out there. And I get that. I did a whole piece earlier in the year about the guys who kind of fall off the cliff when they have a huge, like their highest total of touches the year before. Only Derrick Henry is still doing it at a high level. Yeah. Everyone else, like Adrian Peterson and all the other guys who Jamal Lewis who had a
two. Yes, Lewis. Uh-huh.
All those guys, when they got to that number, and Barkley blew away his number of 50 more carries this year than he's ever had. Didn't seem nicked up or banged up. I know he tore the knee up a couple of years ago. He seemed healthy the whole year, but historically they tend to go downhill after that, or at least everyone except Derrick, not named Derrick Henry in the last 10 years has. So we'll see. We'll see about his durability. To me, he's different than a normal running back. He's kind of in a different category, like guys play forever, like LeBron. I'm not saying he's LeBron, but LeBron still, what is he, like in his 40s now, and he's still like one of the best players on the court when he steps on it. Still does the right thing, still can shoot, still can run. And he plays in deep into the playoffs too. You know, that when you play extra football games each year, like the really good guy, like, I know Mahomes, I think Travis Kelce was talking about it today, but
that's right. Three extra games
each year. It's football, and that takes a toll, and that's why it's good to get that bye. But it's funny. One game changes a whole narrative of like the Chiefs. You know what I mean? I shouldn't say outside because you guys are inside. I like doing these podcasts, by the way, because we have intelligent people here. But like you said, the people that still were out there betting the Ravens and stuff, because, you know, why are people still betting on the Ravens? Steve said you've seen them in the playoffs. I don't know. That's why the public is usually wrong. But the Chiefs, and I tell Steve, we talk about this, you know, every week is a different season in the NFL. Was it one of those games, Steve, or was it? I mean, that's one of those games you see like in October and we laugh about it on Monday. Oh, it's another week in the NFL. But that was weird because that was a mess. If you're the Chiefs, that was a complete mess. Like everything top to bottom was a mess. Was it all Eagles or did the Chiefs implode? Or this is why I said beforehand, and another reason I lean toward the Eagles, it's really hard to maintain that level all the way through three seasons in a row. That's why no one's ever won three Super Bowls in a row.
Well, there's been nine teams who won back-to-back Super Bowls. They're 0-9 the third year, not even getting to the Super Bowl.
Not even getting there.
But nobody has done it. And I'll say one thing for the old-time Packers. They won the first two Super Bowls easily, and they won the championship the year before the Super Bowl started, so they must feel bad because if they had started the Super Bowl one year earlier, they would have won the first three, although the competition wasn't what it was.
Right.
Bill Namath shocked the world, and then Len Dawson with the Kansas City Chiefs won Super Bowl IV, and then it kind of came together. But I the Packers won three championships in a row, and that's a big deal. I know it's 100 years ago, and there weren't that many teams, but – that was a long time ago, but they were a great, great team, those Packers of the 60s.
They were. I want to get some closing notes from you guys here because I know we got a hard out in a couple of minutes here. The one thing that I will put out there is somebody who was overshadowed by the performance of the other big-time cornerback for Philly, Quinyon Mitchell. Going back to when he was drafted last year, we talked about this on our post-draft show that we were doing here because he was the, of course, first round selection that they had, and the kid from Toledo. And so that was a thing that I noted, that the NFL does this goofy thing of where, you know, they'll have the remote picks. That pick, for whatever reason, was made by somebody who was standing in Australia for some reason. And they
beat was Jordan Mailata. That was Jordan Mailata. Oh. Because he's from Australia, the left tackle, I think, made that pick. You mean when you go to one of your affiliates?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
That was okay. Jordan Mailata who picked that.
Okay. All right. So he announced, he's the one that announced the Mitchell pick then. Okay. All right. Well, that, and I said, and I know that you guys always love whenever I come up with this, where the hell did Rick find this kind of stuff? But so one of my obscure interests that I have is the recent couple of decades of Australian history and politics. And one of the preeminent national politicians in the Labor Party in the earlier part of the 21st century in Australia is a woman named Christina Keneally, who actually moved over from America, you guessed it, the Toledo area. So there's your tie-in. I wonder what she was thinking when she's sitting there watching the NFL draft, no doubt globally, seeing that somebody standing in Australia announcing a Toledo player in the first round of the NFL draft. So
very nice.
That's my oddball note here.
Go stay, Zach. Where else can you get this stuff?
Where else can you get it? Only here.
Only here. My dad always says I'm a fount of useless knowledge, and I keep proving it as we go along here. So closing notes, I'll throw it to you next, Steve. What do you got?
The closing notes, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't say one way to stop the Chiefs and Mahomes is to keep them on the bench. And the minutes were 37 to 23 for the Eagles. Now, you could say it was such a slaughter at the beginning. Maybe it didn't make a big deal, but I think it got into their heads pretty quickly. It was 7-0, and they looked, you know, I sent Joe a text, they're hanging around. The Eagles are playing much better, but it's 7-0, and then it's 10-0, and then it's 17-0. And then, you know, it was off to the races. They literally couldn't move the ball. I've never seen a Mahomes team not be able to move the ball. Now, as Johnny pointed out, the Buccaneers did a good job against them. But, you know, he had an okay game there, but they got hammered. But this was far worse, I thought, than the Buccaneers Super Bowl that they lost to. But now they got to go back to the drawing board. They're 3-2 in the Super Bowl. That's fantastic. Mahomes is only 28. That's fantastic. But to me, they're far away from the Eagles. And I don't think you can even say, it's only one game, because it's the game. And they clearly showed, the Eagles clearly showed that they can dominate them at both lines of scrimmage. And I don't think that's going to change next year. They're going to have to try and get some linemen. But you don't snap your fingers and get somebody who can block these guys. Tooney will be back at left guard next year for sure, but they need to get some guys to play the tackles. And frankly, they didn't get much heat on the Eagles. They didn't get much, you know, Hurts 2 sacks, but really he ran like a crazy man whenever he wanted to, pretty much. And, you know, knows how to slide. Hopefully he learned. I think he had a concussion this year maybe, but that's the other thing quarterbacks have to do is learn how to slide all the time. And Mahomes never had a chance. I think he ran once for a few yards, but most of the time he was bottled up. So they've got a long way to go based on this game to get back to the Eagles. We'll see what happens. But time of possession is a pretty good way to beat Tom Brady or Mahomes or beat anybody who's a really, really good quarterback. Keep him on the bench.
I would agree with that, certainly. Joe, what have you got, buddy?
Steve, you're right. When you say that, I always think back to Jim Kelly only being on the field for 19 minutes with that Bills team, and Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator for the Giants. And
that's right.
Where Norwood missed the kick, kept him off the field. You know, football is pretty much, when it comes down to it, still the same. You know, some things still transcend the generations. You know, usually defense and the running game travels. But I always talk about turnovers, and really – in the playoffs, the Eagles had 13 takeaways and 1 giveaway. You're going to win some games doing that. But the first 6 turnovers after the Green Bay and the Rams game, they only turned those 6 turnovers into 13 points. You hear about complementary football all the time. Now, that's like the term in the last couple of years, complementary football. Defense does this. The offense has to do this, or vice versa. Well, the next 7 turnovers in the Redskins game and the Super Bowl, the Eagles scored 42 points. They had 6 touchdowns, no field goals, 6 touchdowns off of those 7 turnovers. And they did it at the end of each half. The Commanders game was close. They scored, interception, boom, touchdown. Pick 6, touchdown, which is a direct, you know, 7 points. And then it's still 17. Okay, that's not the end of the world. Another interception, boom, and not a field goal. A.J. Brown, touchdown to the left, 24 points right there. And that's really hard to overcome. So when your offense is converting, when your defense is giving you the ball in short fields, and you're you've been a takeaway machine over the course of four games. You know, listen, the results speak for themselves.
Yep.
They do. And the results say that the Philadelphia Eagles, Super Bowl 59 champions, their second Super Bowl since February of 2018. And so, again, congratulations, Joe, and everyone in Eagles Nation here for a great outcome in the game. And we will see what goes along. But, again, look forward to continuing to talk all the sports with you guys here on this show. As I expressed to you guys for our Super Bowl preview show, again, we're new in getting back to the video stuff here, but that was one where I just felt like all the way around and in all aspects of the production, I couldn't have been happier with it, and I'll put this one right up alongside it. So thank you both very much.
Thank you, Rick. I just wanted to say one more thing. The parade's Friday because of the bad weather here, and I'm going to take my daughter, and she doesn't want me any parts of me chaperoning her and her friends, but so we're negotiating. But I was telling her that like they want to go down to the train. And I was just, you know, I don't know even if she's listening, but football, it's come such a long way. I was like, the train, really? And then I thought about it. You know, in the 1960 game, the last championship before the Philly special, Steve Van Buren, the Eagles' top back, took the train. He used to ride the train. He took the train to the game. So, like, back then, players were on SEPTA, which is our transportation. You're taking the train to the game. We're taking it to the parade. You know, it's come a long way, but still – you know, I get again, some things just, you know, transcend the generations. And she kind of looked at me. I don't think she really got the you know, irony of all that, but I tried.
Well, Joe, I always appreciate it. And like with so many of the points that you continue to make on the show here, all I can say is, hey, man, nice shot. So thank you very much. Thanks to both of you. And thank you guys for being a part of this great recap. Thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1811.